Type 2 diabetes is one of the more common ailments in the U.S. The CDC estimates it affects more than 34 million Americans. My next guest says more than 9.5% of Arizonans are type 2 diabetic, and roughly half the state's residents are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. Ben Rehnquist is an associate professor in the University of Arizona School of Animal and Comparative Biomedical Sciences and has been working on a new target to treat type 2 diabetes. His lab focuses on how fatty liver affects the health of people with obesity, and he believes that organ could hold the key to a new treatment for type 2 diabetes. Rehnquist joins me to talk more about this. And Ben, let's start with some background in terms of what you're looking to do relative to the most common treatments currently available.
What we really looked at was all of the evidence from the literature that said the liver was involved in regulating the incidence of type 2 diabetes. And what happens when you become obese is you start to store lipids or fat in areas that you aren't normally supposed to store those, including in the liver. And that's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And we wanted to understand exactly how that was causing type 2 diabetes. Current therapies right now, what they're focused on is lowering blood glucose, because we all know that in type 2 diabetes, you have elevated blood glucose, and that's the problem. And so they're trying to decrease blood glucose either by decreasing absorption of glucose or increasing insulin, which is the hormone that causes your body to be able to clear glucose, or improving the response of your tissues to that insulin. We thought that's great, but that's like treating the flu by trying to decrease your fever. And so taking some Tylenol when you have the flu. If you can actually identify the way that the disease is caused and treat the cause of the disease, you're more likely to have a therapy that will work over a more sustainable period of time. So that was our focus.
Now, am I right that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is also very, very common, right?
It is. Yeah, it's got an incidence rate very similar to that of type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes.
So how then do you try to use the liver to maybe get a more holistic treatment for type 2 diabetes as opposed to, as you say, you know, taking Tylenol to treat the flu? How do you actually try to treat type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, we started with the very simple premise that if we could figure out what the liver was signaling with, so what it was using to say, hey, I've got fat in the liver, we could then identify that signal and try and block that. And so what's really neat about how we think about the body, we always think about the brain controlling the rest of your body. And that's truly what's happening. But what's also happening is your body is communicating back to the brain to tell it, hey, this is the status, these are the changes you should make. And so we wanted to understand how the liver was communicating back to the brain to say, we've got a lot of fat in our liver. And so we took liver slices from obese, diet-induced obese mice, and from lean mice, and we measured chemicals that might signal back to the brain. And we identified one specifically known as gamma-aminobutyric acid, or for short, GABA, that was produced more in obesity.
So is the key then to regulate that GABA in terms of trying to get an actual treatment here?
Yeah. So the next step we took once we found that was to try and identify how that GABA was being produced and why obesity was causing an increase in the release of that GABA. And so we did a number of studies on that. We identified a protein in the liver that was responsible for the production of that GABA. And then we inhibited that protein from working, or we eliminated it from the liver. And in both cases, whether we eliminated it from the liver or we just inhibited it from working, we restored normal, healthy glucose homeostasis in the mice. So we had mice that were equivalent to being 350-pound humans that within 4 days now looked like a 150-pound human metabolically.
Wow. It almost sounds like, to use a very old analogy, it almost sounds like a different patch on an old like phone connection where, you know, you stuck the cables into one end to connect you to somebody else. It sounds like you kind of had to bypass this GABA to make sure that the liver and the brain were communicating properly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The GABA is a normal signal that should occur, but when it's continuously being produced all of the time and not in response to changes about whether you've eaten a meal or not, the brain gets this continuous signal that's inhibitory and it processes it inappropriately.
Are there any dangers of inhibiting or stopping this from working? Like, are there other things that GABA does that it needs to do for our bodies to work properly?
Yeah, that's a really key point. And that's one of the things that's going to, you know, slow the progress into a clinical application, is that GABA is the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter in the body. So it's key throughout your brain. Without sufficient GABA, you actually have other problems, like epilepsy can occur. And so all of the current drugs that are working to affect GABA production or GABA breakdown work on the central nervous system. What we're currently focusing on is identifying a way to just inhibit the liver's ability to produce GABA and not have it cross into the brain.
So what's the next step in the research then? I assume it's to try to find ways to just inhibit the GABA coming from the liver. But is that the only thing that has to happen before, for example, you can maybe move into some kind of clinical trial or something like that?
Well, we're lucky because there are FDA-approved GABA transaminase inhibitors that are relatively safe. They do cross into the brain. But for a short-term trial to validate that this is a good target, we're conducting a clinical trial at Washington University in St. Louis to test the effect of inhibiting GABA transaminase on glucose homeostasis in obese humans. And we're excited to do that. So we will understand if it works. The other thing we're doing is we are currently working to develop GABA transaminase inhibitors that won't cross the blood-brain barrier. We've conducted in silico screens of 70,000 compounds, and working with a collaborator in pharmacology, we have narrowed that list of 70,000 down to 4 that currently work very well. We're testing those in mice, and then we intend to modify those to further prevent them from crossing into the blood-brain barrier and to improve their efficacy, with the idea that within a couple of years, we could have something ready to go into a clinical trial.
Ben Rehnquist is an associate professor in the University of Arizona's School of Animal and Comparative Biomedical Sciences, and you are listening to the show.